This call may be recorded or transcribed.
Sometimes we're not prepared for adversity. When it happens, sometimes we're caught short. We don't know exactly how to handle it when it comes up. Sometimes we don't know just what to do when adversity takes over. And I have advice for all of us. I got it from our pianist, Joe Zawinul, who wrote this tune. And it sounds like what you're supposed to say when you have that kind of problem. It's called mercy, mercy, mercy.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank. with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation, too, to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diasporas, both objects of a global miasma that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that described them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation, too, to our children and those yet to be born. For they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, for they will call your name in all eternity. To our children, we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
It's 1972, an election year. Once again, black people are running for their lives. Reasons are things like the King Alfred Plan, the concentration camps that were used during the Second World War to house Oriental Americans are now being refurbished to confine their new residents, i.e. black people. Brothers and sisters, there is a place for you in America. This is the King Alfred Plan. Ha! Brothers and sisters, there is a place for you in America. Places are being prepared and ready night and day, night and day. The white boy's plan is being ready night and day, night and day. Listen close to what raps say about traps like Allenwood, PA. Already legal in D.C. to preventively detain you and me. How long you think it's going to be before even our dreams ain't free? You think I exaggerate? Check out Allenwood, PA. Night and day, the white boy scheming night and day. The Jews and Hitler come to mind, the thought of slavery far behind. But white paranoia's here to stay, the white boy scheming night and day. What you think about the King Alfred plan? You ain't heard? Where you been, man? If I may paraphrase, the government notice reads,
should there at any time become a clear and present danger initiated by any radical element threatening the operations of the government of the United States of America, members of this radical element shall be transported to detention centers until such time as their threat has been eliminated. Code King Alfred.
Bullshit, I bet you say. There ain't no Allenwood, PA, and people ain't waiting night and day, night and day, night and day. There will be, without the Motown sound and Thunderbird wallowing in the echoes of Malcolm's words, there must be black unity. There must be black unity, for in the end, unity will be thrust upon us and we upon it and each other. Locked in cages, pinned, hemmed in, shoulder to shoulder, arms outstretched for just a crust of bread, watermelon mirages, an oasis that does not exist, conjured up by the bubbling stench, unwashed bodies and unsanitary quarters, concrete and barbed wire, babies screaming, stumbling around in a mental circle because you never cared enough to be black. In the end, unity will be thrust upon us, blanketed, stifled, a salty taste in your mouth from blood oozing from cracks in woolly heads, red pools becoming thicker than syrup, slow down your face, birds matted by the life force sprung loose from wells, well deep by the enforcers of mock justice of the red, white, and blue. In the end, unity will be thrust upon us. Let us unite because of love and not hate. Let us unite on our own and not because of barbed wire death. You dare not ignore the things I say. Whitey's waiting night and day, night and day, night and day, night and day.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and greetings, my sisters and brothers, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here again on a Tuesday evening to talk with you and discuss some of the things that are happening in our world. We have a busy, busy world, and there are so many things that are affecting and impacting the lives of African people. And so we would like to discuss those tonight, this evening, some of those at least. We are watching the King Alfred Plan. We are definitely watching that each day. And as you sit in front of your television screens and you watch those images of those brothers and sisters down in Haiti, and you scringe with just the horror behind all of that as you watch that John Wayne, Davy Crockett, Lone Ranger mentality that takes on with these individuals. Tonight we have assembled a couple of folks who are going to talk from a very specific realm of things. I want to talk a little bit about Haiti. I really want to discuss Haiti. We want to go back in history and look at some of the things as it relates to Haiti. We want to talk about the obviously this current situation But talk a little bit about the Haitian Revolution and looking at that history and how that impacts this, that whole colonialization. We want to talk a little bit about the Franks, better known as the French, who were responsible for a lot of the things that would be encountered with Haiti. We want to discuss that a little bit. And then I kind of want to take a look, too, because obviously on top of what we're seeing, a lot of that was instigated by a horrible earthquake that took a lot of lives. And we want to talk about that earthquake in Haiti and asking the question, maybe, why is Haiti having those problems and challenges in a sense? You know, what is it about the geology and the geography of Haiti that may have caused that? And we have a couple of folks who are experts in that area. It might be able to help us understand why is it that Haiti has that, because when we look at a map or when we look at the studies that have been done, a lot of these earthquakes, these devastating earthquakes in Haiti, did not occur until in the latter part of the 20th century, in the middle of the 20th century. So is there something that we need to understand about that? So that's what we want to talk a little bit about that. And then obviously that whole history and the whole dynamics of the colonization of Africa and African people and how that started. So that's part of our conversation tonight. What I'd also like to do is to, as we always do, an ancestor profile, but we're going to hold on that for a minute and incorporate that into this discussion. And I've asked Dr. Bridges to come on and kind of talk a little bit about the whole idea that he's going to do an ancestral profile based on some of the players of our ancestors who were a part of that whole Haitian chain. So we want to have a real good conversation tonight about Haiti and some of the things that occurred there now, what's going on now, the hurricane, starvation, you know, and so forth. And as I said, as we listen to the news and see what's things that are going on, and then noticing also how the news is responding to that. It's interesting. I hear more about a missing white girl in Wyoming than I've heard about the Haitian Revolution. I can't understand what's so significant. I mean, anybody missing and dead, but I think about all the African children and babies that are missing. We don't get that kind of coverage. But yet we are hearing about this one person in Wyoming. Every time the news comes on, that's first. So anyway, those are the kinds of things we want to look at. We don't want to be too picky, but, you know, it's obvious that something is obviously going on. So we want to take a look at that. I had a young brother that's going to come. He was the son of one of our panelists who has been on our program many times in the past. Wonderful brother by the name of Brother Renzi Taylor. Renzi is now an ancestor, but his son is busy. He's out in the marketplace doing his thing. He's doing some things like working for the Democratic Party. He's working for the Biden administration. And he has been assigned to work on this situation with the border issue. And he was going to come on and talk a little bit about that. But he's busy right now working on that situation. And he said they have a conference this evening that would prohibit him from being on because they are trying to work with the Texas folk and the White House and resolve some of these problems. And anyway, so he would come. He wants to come on. He said he would be willing to come on maybe in a couple of weeks from now and talk about what was going on behind the scenes as it relates to the government. One of the questions I ask in the promo, you know, where are all of the diplomacy protocols that are usually implied during situations like this? Where are the ambassadors from Haiti, the ambassador from America? Where's all of that? And it's just not normally being handled, has not normally handled this way. I've never seen, and it may have happened, I'm just saying I haven't seen it, mounted ICE people controlling the border in that way. I didn't see that when the Mexican situation occurred and some of those other issues. I've never seen it done in that manner. So those are just some things that we want to talk about and make ourselves aware of and be mindful of in terms of how we deal with life in this country. And that's where we kind of wanted to go. So, first of all, let me just start by saying, you know, what we are looking at is historical. It goes back a long way in terms of how Africa was responded to by the Euro-Arab world, and that's key. And in the beginning of the transatlantic slave system and the Indian Ocean slave system and all of those things, the Euro world basically had consisted of five country institutions that were involved. And one was the Portuguese. They were kind of like the first that were into Africa. And the Portuguese went in the early 1400s, 1300s, Henry the Navigator, trying to circumvent the Cape of Good Hope, looking at the coastlines of Africa. And then the Spanish came in, and they built a lot of those forts and trade centers along the African coastline. And then after that, you had the French came in, not in a big way, but the French did come in, and they began to set up trading posts in Senegal and along those lines of West Africa. And then following them were the Dutch, and the Dutch were the ship builders, and they were bringing these humongous ships into the coast of Africa as well, and the whole history of that is available for us as well. And then the last were the English, and the English would come in, and a part of their system and the work that they would do, as I've often said, was the cruelest. They had the cruelest approach to that whole system. But that's what we're looking at in terms of that history. We're looking at these five Euro countries and their behavior and their interaction with Africa, all the way from the northern coast of the Mediterranean of Africa all the way down to the Cape of Good Hope. And that's the history, and that's the part of the discussion that, you know, we want to talk about tonight. Now, as it relates to the Haitians themselves, the Haitians that you know were captured by the Africans, the Haitians, it has created some of the worst conditions for them that you would ever believe. The Spaniards were the first to colonize the island, an island called Hispaniola, back in 1492. The Frenchmen soon would come in and settle on the western part of that land, which became the colony of St. Domingo. And with increased investment and immigration, these islands began to produce and become very productive colonies. So around the 1780s, you would see them trading with large parts of the world. And having been denied the right to associate it with the French Revolution, a lot of the Africans who were working those lands and working those places would not have the same opportunity to be able to, you know, live a life, you know, without a lot of difficult and challenges. So a lot of the Africans were upset by the way they were being treated and the fact that they had been being held captive in their, in those lands. And as a result, they began to rebel. And the first of those rebellions defeated the British and a lot of the Spanish forces. And then later, they defeated the Napoleon's troops, which was sent in also. And we're going to talk a little bit more just in detail about that, because it's that interaction that we're going to find that's causing some of this destruction today. Haiti did achieve its independence in 1804. The first ruler was Jean-Jacques Dessalines, who were later was assassinated in 1806. In 1807, Haiti split in half. Henri Christol ruled the north part, and Alexander Pétion ruled the south. Pétion became a program of land distribution to soldiers and what some call the lower classes so that they could become small-scale farmers, while Christophe's retained the plantation system. And as a result of that, Haiti began to attempt to try to reunite themselves and become a solid piece after this revolution. Boyer, who agreed to pay an indemnity to France, other words, now the people that captured the Haitians, the Africans, put them in captivity in the San Domingo, and they end up fighting for their freedom, had to pay reparations to the French. And a part of that payment of reparations is really what put them in shambles. Haiti was in shambles after the war anyway. It destroyed basically their capital base after the destruction of the land and property of the plantation system. Haiti also was unable to invest in its own rebuilding of its economy. And it did not have the resources available to it as what a nation would do once they might have gotten their freedom. Haiti prohibited foreign investment because they had to. They were afraid that obviously they may be challenged again. But the foreigners were uninterested in investing in the nation after the slavery vote. And so due to this behavior, Haiti, you know, and its nations beyond Haiti, they began to place embargoes upon the nation. Haiti had no trade relations with anybody, diplomatic relations or official recognitions. So Haiti could not access those markets for its products due to these factors, as well as the desires of those who were previously in captivity. The economy began to focus on subsistence farming rather than plantation agriculture. The ex-captives dreamed of owning their own land because they associated proprietorship with freedom, and they did not share in the wealth of the plantation system. So the ruling classes attempted to use restrictive labor practices to preserve the plantation. So in a sense, those who were in captivity began to split economically as well as culturally. But they were unable to really put in place any kind of strong economy. So finally, the indemnity payments to France for losses during the crisis, during the war, created a horrible fiscal policy. It drained the nation of few resources it possessed. Reparations payments to France dominated the budget, leaving little available for productive investments that could promote development. And that is what you are beginning, that is what you are seeing, that is why Haiti has not been able to build. A lot of the leadership of Haiti has been placed there by enemies, has been put into place, and we're going to have some, even go back and talk about some of those Haitian leaders that were not productive for the people. And so those are, that is the way that we want to take this conversation, because if one sits back and you look at all of this, that first thing that comes is the question is, why can't they take care of themselves? What happened? Everybody else does, and you always hear that because that's what they said about the Africans here in America. Why can't they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps? Every other immigrant came over here and do that. Why couldn't they do it? But see, that kind of thinking is that John Wayne, Davy Crockett, the Lone Ranger kind of idea, is that Euro way that has no logic, no system, and there's no kind of critical analysis whatsoever to that. And so it requires us to really understand the history of where Haiti has come from. And then, as I said, on coupled with that, those earthquakes and the wet and that those storms that have occurred in that area, which I think is a little suspect, you know, and I'm not an expert on climate and plate tectonics and some of those things that affect those tsunamis and hurricanes. But I just, you know, Haiti, when it gets hit hard. And this last one took about 300,000 people with it. And as a result of that, this is what we're seeing tonight. People are trying to find food, clothing, and shelter. And they're going wherever they can go. It's closer to come here because of the fact that where it is, it's not that far. You know, it's particular in the way that they have to, are going to have to do. And they try, as they, you see, crossing the border to come over here. But it's being met with some very hostile and cruel ways. So I've asked some folks to come who've been really studying this and looking at this a little bit deeper. I'm going to start off with that ancestral profile piece that we wanted to talk about that then will take us into the discussion of not only just the geography of this, but as well as some of the cultural differences that we're going to find even among the Haitian people themselves. And that's another area that's good there. The French were, as I said, we're looking at a lot of French behavior, and that French behavior is very difficult because we're talking about the Franks. The Franks, as you know, historically are Germans, and the Franks were the ones that were holding most of that northern part of Africa in hostility and others. So that's what we want to take a look at tonight. So with that, I want to ask Dr. Bridges, he come forward and talk to us a little bit. Dr. Bridges is a geographer. He has graduate degree research in geography, his PhD in geography, and he is going to talk to us a little bit about the geographical elements of this discussion, as well as some of the French Revolution and some of the things that might be of interest. And then we're going to open up for the rest of you who might have some ideas and thoughts. Some of the others of you who have studied, as you know, the major study of the French Revolution is C.L.R. James' book, The Black Jacobins. And there are some that have read those and know about the history of that and talk a little bit about what Dr. C.L.R. James was trying to do. So with that, Dr. Bridges, how are you doing this evening? Dr. Bridges?
I'm okay, brother. I wanted to take my mute off. That's what took me a second. I wanted to take my mute off.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I had my mute on so I could, you know, make sure it was quiet. I didn't want to disturb this good lecture, this good teaching you're giving.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, but in terms of ancestor profile, first of all, you mentioned Toussaint Louverture, and you mentioned Christophe, and you mentioned Pétion, and Dessalines, also a long list of Haitian leaders during the revolution. And I just wanted to mention too, if you don't mind, Dr. Rogers, let me just mention, if there's some people in our audience who are listening that might want to take some notes and take out a map, because we're going to go into some things tonight that they might want to follow us with, you know, if they want to just take a second while I'm talking to do that. But because we're going to talk about some things tonight, and they might want to just, you know, sometimes stuff is kind of hard to follow just listening to it, you know.
Yes.
So yeah, but anyway, yeah, so we talked about that whole list of African Haitian leaders whose names you just called on the roll. But the beginning of all this is one that's oftentimes overlooked when you talk about the Haitian Revolution and its leadership. And that's a person whose name is French, and that's all that we know. But his name was François Macandal. McCandell, or McCandell, however you want to pronounce it. And that spell, M-A-C-A-N-D-A-L, in case people might want to go look him up later, and you hear very little about François McCandell. You and I talked about him a little bit before the program.
Right.
But and nobody really knows a lot about him, but he preceded all the people that you mentioned today. Tonight. And McCandell actually was believed to have been born somewhere in the Congo, but I've seen other accounts that he was born in West Africa and around the areas of Guinea. And then I've also read accounts where he was born over in North Africa around the mountainous region called the Maghreb, where Arabic is spoken, because he was fluent in Arabic and he was fluent in French, which is Congo. Mm-hmm. Congo, French colonized the Congo. So when he came to the plantations of Haiti, he was already in two languages, and it was also said that he was a tremendous musician and really a great orator. And also he had studied the white man's version of Christianity, and in his studying that version of Christianity, he believed himself to be the Messiah. And McCandell is given credit for having prophesied that one day black people would defeat white people and become free. And when Haiti became free and independent in 1804, they thought back on that and said McCandell was right. But he had studied the Bible, so he was well studied. And this is another thing we need to understand as people. Wherever we have gone to work on the plantations, whether or not it's the sugar plantations and coffee plantations in or the cotton and tobacco plantations in this country, we are not people who didn't know anything before we got here. Mm-hmm. We were already skilled, and there are several books to talk about this, as agricultural scientists, and already knowing how to perform crop rotation and various other kinds of things when we got here. How we were so able to make the American economy become so tremendously successful because of the skills that we applied when we got here. So we didn't come here as savages or primitives as we were taught in the school books when we were on these plantations, and even not only the plantations, but even when we were growing up, you and I, that's what we were basically taught through Little Sambo and some of those other kinds of things.
Exactly.
But that's not
mm-hmm.
who we were. So McCandall was known throughout the colony, and what he did, he began to recklessly attack French plantation owners and fearlessly, with little or no regard for his own personal safety. And what he did, he also believed in using herbs and medicines from the field. And he would give these medicines and herbs and plants that he had gotten from the field to other slaves on the plantation. The house slaves, he would give them to the house slaves and tell the house slaves to mix that in with the food that they were feeding the masters,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually engaged in guerrilla warfare
mm-hmm.
long before Toussaint Louverture. As a matter of fact, McCandall died somewhere in about 1758, and that's the Haitian Revolution came, 1791, about 30, 40 years, after he was killed, a little after the Haitian Revolution started. But also in reading about McCandall and in comparison with Denmark Beazie and also with Gabriel Prosser and with Nat Turner, he had a cell organization. He had a network of people, as Denmark Beazie did, and he would get his people in quiet secrecy and taught them how to use torches, taught them how to use these medicines and these herbs, and how to poison the masters in a guerrilla style.
Mm.
And also McCandall, just like what happened to Nat, Denmark Beazie, and Gabriel Prosser, he was betrayed by Uncle Tom on the plantation.
Yep, I'm sure of that.
So we start talking about Uncle Tom mentality. The Uncle Tom mentality doesn't have to be in South Carolina and North Carolina or with Nat Turner or Denmark Beazie, but this Uncle Tom also was down in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And so white people were able to contact some of the followers of McCandall and got them to divulge information on his whereabouts and what he was doing, because many whites were becoming very settled when some of them fell out dead after eating dinner, or some of them were, McCandall also taught the men and women on the plantation how to poison the water, how to poison the animals, how to put it in the hog pens, how to put it in the chicken coops, and everywhere. This guerrilla underground warfare is what he used. And white plantation owners were able to get somebody to tell on him, to squeal, and that's how they caught him. And they executed him and burned him at a stake in 1758. And it was believed, now of course this is folklore, that he didn't even die then, but his body took the form of a bird and he flew off into the air.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
McCandall is. And in terms of his Arabic, I did want to mention, too, that when he was captured by the white plantation owners, he made a declaration in the Arabic language, the Shahada. He said, La ilaha illallah Muhammadan Rasulullah, which means there's no God but Allah. So he spoke
and
Arabic.
Muhammad is
the messenger. That's exactly right. Exactly. That's what McCandall did. And then if you look into Haitian history now, his picture is even on some of the coins. There's a monument to him in
mm-hmm.
Haiti even today. But C.L.R. James and his work, The Great Jacobins, he spotlights Toussaint Louverture, and another white writer spotlights Christophe,
yeah.
and others spotlight Théon, but none of them actually spotlighted McCandall.
Mm-hmm.
And it was believed he was taken from his village at about the age of 12, and then he's brought to the slave coast of Africa to be sold on the slave ship, and then taken into Haiti as a boy of about 12 years of age.
History
is going on, but I mentioned it, and I wanted to spell it for our listeners so that they can look him up if they want to. Again,
We can argue that what this brother was doing actually weakened the French system tremendously, because obviously this colony was there to produce goods and to be able to sell them along those trading routes that they had set up. The French, the Portuguese, the Spanish had all these trading routes along that area, because that was a rich colony. So he was able to weaken that. Is that correct?
Dr. Bridges, can you spell that name again for me? I'm sorry, Dr. Rogers.
Yeah, okay. And actually, Dr. Rogers, he also, the French troops, which is very important when you look at military science, the French troops were already weakened and were on the ropes because, by the time that Toussaint and Bookman, by the time they began to deal with the French directly, straight up on the battlefield, the troops were already weakened by McCandall. He had weakened the animals, the water, the horses couldn't run like they wanted to. Some of them died, you see. So he had weakened the troops in his guerrilla technique of warfare, and so that made it easier for Toussaint, Christophe, Bookman, Dessalines, and others to come behind him and to successfully defeat the French. You see, so he's a name that you don't hear about. And one thing I found out from other reading too, and that is that white people would take a person who is successful at doing anything and keep that person's name, the events of his or her life, and their background away from the slaves.
Yes,
so
that's
the
true.
Slaves were, right, we know why. So they would feel that they can't do anything. This is why they put in Baton Rouge. That's why they would put the heads of black men on the sticks, the red stick, baton, the red. That's the name, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Baton, put those heads, and they did the same thing with Native Americans, just to intimidate us. Intimidate us.
Right.
You see, and so anything that you can do to intimidate the enslaved people to keep them from rising up against the master, then you do it. And I've noticed that's a military technique that white people will endorse.
They will.
And that's what they actually...
Because they do it to each other.
McCandall, let me spell this for the sisters. I'm going to be quiet. M-A-C-A-N-D-A-L. McCandall. Almost just like it sounds. Mac, M-A-C. A-N-D-A-L. Okay, Doc. But I just wanted to mention that as our ancestor profile, because without McCandall, there wouldn't have been a Toussaint Louverture and a Christophe and a Bookman, you see, because he was the first.
And see, one of the critical things for our listeners and those, and by the way, if you're listening via the Internet, you can give us a call if you'd like to say something, ask a question, make a remark. It's 215-490-9832. Again, 215-490-9832. Just call us. We'd love to hear from you. You can give your input on some of the ideas. Now, Brother Tim, are you on the line? Because I want to...
I am, sir, and I'd like to say something if possible.
I will. I'll get to you in just a minute, Brother Tim.
Yes, sir.
Brother Tim from North Carolina, are you on the line? Because I want to ask you a question, because you have been doing some independent private research on the Haitian Revolution, and I think it's very, very important that you might want to indicate some of the areas in which you've researched, because very clearly what Dr. Bridges brought out just now in talking about this brother is that somehow or the other this missed many of the research areas, including G.M. James, because it's, you know, and I think it has a lot to do with the class problem sometimes.
It does.
It has a lot to do with that and given things. So, Brother Tim, are you on? If so.
Yes, sir.
Oh. Not Timothy from Philadelphia. Timothy from North Carolina.
Okay. Hey, we got two Timothys, though.
You got two Timothys. I'll come to you, Brother Timothy from Philadelphia.
Yes,
I'll come in a minute. Let me ask the brother from North Carolina. So hopefully he'll call us. You said he had to move from his computer to the telephone. So, we'll get to him. But Dr. Bridges, while we're waiting for him to come on, I got to ask this question. A lot of what we're seeing now, has been initiated by a hurricane. By an earthquake that came through Haiti and destroyed it. Now, I did something today in preparation for the program. I went back and I looked at the number of earthquakes that have occurred in Haiti. And surprisingly,
how many has it?
Surprisingly, it's been several, but they were not of any major magnitude. It's only in the last half of the 20th century that we get those monsters that came through and did the damage that they did. And so prior to that, like, for instance, let me just think I even wrote them down. The one we just had, August 14th of this year, 2,248 people lost their lives behind that. A 7.2 magnitude earthquake. Prior to that was October the 7th, 2018. Wasn't a big one, but 18 people lost their lives. A 5.9 magnitude earthquake. And then the monster was January the 12th, 2010, between 100,000 and 316,000 people lost their lives in that particular earthquake. And then after that, there have been smaller ones, 4 people, 2 people. And then I think the oldest one to that after that was 1842, May of 1842, 5,300, which actually was the highest of the magnitude, 8.1 scale, happened then. And then after that, there have been some others, but they were all very small, a minimal loss of life. Most of it occurred around the water, so nothing of really significance. So, here's the question. Is there technology that can alter weather patterns, can create certain waves? And I have read that, and then I've had people to dispute vehemently that there's no such thing as that. Can you talk a little bit about that for us, Dr. Bridges? Any truth to some of that?
First of all, you're absolutely right. These kinds of so-called, and I say so-called because they are oftentimes man-made, so-called natural occurrences can be produced by human beings. Mm-hmm. As an example, earthquakes can, and first of all, the Earth is always moving, and the Earth is always what they call faulting, F-A-U-L-T-I-N-G, faulting. There's always a fault in the Earth, or something uneven or moving in the Earth, and if that faulting that's moved in the plates of the Earth, you see. First of all, the Earth has those three parts. You have the crust, the mantle, and the core. Mm-hmm. And the crust is the upper part of the Earth, just like the crust of a pie. The crust is the upper part, and in the crust of the Earth, there's also what they call, and this gets very technical, but it's also what they call the hypocenter. And in that hypocenter, which is near the crust of the Earth, below that hypocenter is another center called the epicenter. Mm-hmm. And like I said, this is a whole course in this, in what they call geology or geomorphology when this is discussed. But what happens is human beings understanding that the Earth is always faulting, meaning there's a fault, it's not perfect. There's always something unstable or something that's not smooth or not structured the way it should be. They can disturb that fault and cause that fault to become an earthquake or cause that fault to make the Earth quake or shake. That's what a quake is, a shaking in the Earth. As Honorable Elijah Muhammad used to teach on the quaking and shaking of the Earth. But they can cause that fault in the Earth to shake or to get out of place and then make the earth move. And that's what an earthquake basically is. And I'm making it very simple here.
Right.
But that's what it basically is. But it's what
Now, how do they? How can one do that? I understand. It has something to do with radio waves. How is it done?
They have radio waves. They have radio waves that can cause, and these waves can cause this movement in the earth in the same way that waves can cause the movement. Waves not being physical themselves, but waves can cause physical things to move in the same way that a high female voice, or it could be a male voice, but use a female voice, can cause a glass to break. Another kind of wave invented by a human being can cause the whole earth to shake or cause the whole earth to move.
Mm-hmm.
And when it causes that movement or that shaking, that's the earthquake. And depending on how strong that wave is when it's sent off to hit that particular part of the earth, then they say it's number 10 on the Richter scale. The Richter scale lets you know how hard that shaking has been. That's the Richter scale that's used to measure that, in the same way that a thermometer is used to measure the temperature,
right,
or the barometer for the barometric pressure. Then that's in the earthquake, it's the Richter scale.
Okay.
So depending on how much strength that particular radio wave is, that's how they determine the shaking of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So scientists can cause this to happen. There's no doubt about it. And not only can it cause earthquakes to occur, but it can cause the occurrence of volcanic activity in the same way.
Right.
You see.
Which is happening now.
Volcanoes also are caused by the movement of the earth, not on the crust level as the earthquake may be, but it's more in the core of the earth, and the molten lava begins to come up into the openings of the earth and spew out, and then begin.
Right.
And it's very hot, because the further you go into the earth, as the scientists say and understand, the hotter the earth becomes. The further you get
mm-hmm.
from the crust of the earth, the
exactly.
hotter it becomes. And that's what the case is. So that's basically it, just to kind of make it, you know, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, no, that's important. I think that because, like I said, I've read that. I've looked at it. I didn't have enough knowledge to do it. And I know the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had talked about that weather patterns are going to change here in America. I'm not sure if that's the same reasoning that he gives, but I know he had mentioned that in several places. And so, you know.
Well, you know,
let Brother Timothy go. Go on, Brother Timothy.
Okay. You're correct. He talked about the layers of the earth. He talked about the mantle in the center of it. He also talked about the weight of the earth. He talked how far the moon was from the earth. He talked how it spins 137 miles per hour. The sun causes the earth to spin from the light. He talks about the living planet. And if the planet, he said, is a seed. There are nine planets. He talked about the other ones in the solar system. He said, and the earth, it floats. See?
Mm-hmm.
That's why he called it the living planet. He said, you have a heart. The earth has a heart. You sweat. The earth sweat. That's why he calls the earth, it has a heart. Like, you connect that symmetry to yourself. He got you to understand it so you wouldn't be so far away from it. But we talked about what you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquake, the lava, the volcanoes. A lot of people say, what? But that's true, just like you said. And that can
mm-hmm.
be caused. Certain things
mm-hmm.
can be. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's just having the technology that can do that. Uh-huh. Okay.
The sun is the biggest star, of course. The
mm-hmm.
biggest, the heat. He talks about the beginning of that in the theology of time. That's another subject, the theology of time.
Yeah, right.
But
that's yeah, I've read
correct.
The theology of time. Yeah, that's great.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Brother Tim from North Carolina, are you online yet?
Yeah, how you doing?
Fine. Good, brother. How you doing today? Thanks so much for coming on. How you been?
I've been pretty good, man.
Good.
Thanks for asking.
Good. Listen, I know that you have been doing some intense studying on the Haitian Revolution. Would you like to share some of that with us, particularly the resources? What's some of the best things that maybe our listeners might, if they have not seen or heard from these, they can take a look at them and maybe do some research themselves on a lot of this history. This is very important. I started off the program today with Gil Scott-Heron, the King Alpha Plan, and we know the King Alpha Plan was a mythological thing created by John Williams in his book, The Man Who Cried I Am. It's real, though. The behavior of it is real. And very seriously, as we look at the Haitians, we can see some of that. So that's why I think it's so critical that we study that, because a lot of this can be reversed again over and over to us and others in the world. So tell us a little bit about your research process and what you've been looking at.
Well, actually, it hasn't been any real intense research, but the video 1804 deals with that revolution.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. And they talked about it on their video about how the Haitians actually train in alligator swamps.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to worry about anybody, sneaking up on them in their meeting. Mm-hmm. And they actually killed a lot of the French soldiers when they were trying to cross the water, because they were actually underwater waiting for them and took them down and killed them as they were trying to cross over. I don't know an awful lot about their history, with the exception of what they taught us in high school.
Right, which was very little.
It didn't teach us about Mediterranean.
Right.
Or Macedonia. You know, they just taught us about suicide.
Right, we
and,
did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, what I do know is just from reading and looking at video.
Okay, right, yeah.
My name is Tim. Ask you a question. When it came to the guerrilla warfare, was it bullets and steel they were fighting with? Swords and steel? What were they fighting with to beat the French?
They were fighting with knives and swords, but a lot of it was actually was hand to hand, and a lot of it was killing the French as they were trying to approach them coming uphill or crossing water. So they and the French paid the price.
So no bows and arrows. You're saying steel and bullets, probably. No mm-hmm. bows and arrows.
Oh, you know, all the weapons they use, I'm not versed on that. You know, they might have had bows and arrows. I really don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, there is some information, and I'm a little cautious because I always want to be able to give resources to where we get information from. But there has been indications that the strongest battlefield for the African guerrilla warfare has been in the swamps. There's a piece of swampland that runs out of Virginia up through North Carolina called the Dismal Swamp. That was used by our people, first of all, to escape, used by Nat Turner, argue some, to go in and hide. That's why they couldn't find him for a very long time, because he was in the Dismal Swamp. And the Dismal Swamp was water moccasins, alligators, and other things that, you know, that no human being would want to have to encounter. But some of the mythology that I've heard is that Nat Turner had a conversation with him through the Creator, and they guided him. Now, again, I have no documentation of that. I'm just going by storytelling and some of the things that I have heard in the past about how that whole process happened. So you're right, Brother Tim. Those swamps were excellent battlefields. For our guerrilla fighters, and they were able to use those to deal some heavy blows to that. Dr. Bridges, have you heard that about Nat Turner talk to the snakes and the alligators? If so, where did you hear that?
Oh yeah, I have. As a matter of fact, I've heard about it. But you know, I'm like you. I can't put my hand on any.
I don't want to do it. And I got we got one other brother here, very powerful scholar. And maybe I can ask him, Brother Cambone, have you ever heard that?
That's Brother Kamau there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Help check Brother Kamau.
Brother Kamau Cambone?
Hotep, Brother Kamau.
He's on. Maybe he just got his phone muted right now.
Yes, bro.
Okay, Dave. Hotep, my brother.
Good. Black Liberation family. How y'all doing?
Thank you. All right, doing good, my brother. Have you heard that about Nat Turner?
I hadn't heard that story.
Okay. All right. It's a mythological possible story that the Griots might have said and told. As motivation for fighters and soldiers, you know, like so many other do, but the Dismal Swamps. And actually, I heard it from a Yoruba brother who wanted to go back to the Dismal Swamps of North Carolina just to go up there and do some work. And he had gone up in that area. And I also heard it from a sister out of Charleston. I had gone to visit in Charleston, and I was buying some rice baskets from a couple of those sisters. And I asked them what was the history of those rice baskets. And she said that our ancestors went down in those rice fields and swamps and had pulled up this grass, this rice grass, and that's what they used to make those baskets. And these were sources of survival and sale and so forth. And she went on to tell a very lengthy story about some of the history of that. And she said that I would need to probably talk to some of the people older than her who know some of that history. So, again, you know, we've got our stories that we can tell and mythology, and whether they're true or not, they do work sometimes to motivate our people to move forward. So that's
And, you know,
uh-huh. Go ahead.
White historians, Dr. Rod, just real quick. White historians want to dismiss those stories and just put them in the form of folklore and mythology, in the same way they put the elves and the leprechauns and
right. The
stories of, like you just said, about the Dismal Swamps and McCandall. There were quite a few stories about him and some things that he did, but they want to dismiss it. And we can't always explain it, but anything that will make us look positive and inspire us to do something, they want to dismiss it. White historians want to dismiss that.
Okay, mm-hmm, that's true. All right, well, listen, what I'm going to do right quick, because I want to get to some more folks online that I know that might can give us want to give some input to this. We're going to take a quick break, and then this is the top of the hour, and then I want to come back. I want to first start off with that book that was done by the – he's actually Haitian, and he's talking about the Haitian Revolution, and the name of the book is we talked about, you and I talked about it today, Dr. Bridges, slipping my mind. What's the name of that book?
Black Jacobins.
No, not that one. It's the current one that was done with the film about killing all the beast.
I'll look at. I got it beside me. Let me look at.
Matter of fact, I got the book sitting right over here on my desk. I just can't reach it because I'm sitting at the console. I want to talk about that book a little bit because he does go into some.
And what would be good too, some of that background on the French Revolution too would be pretty good too. But anyway, we'll take a break. Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He has that, and he covers that in the book, and he does a magnificent, monumental job in that film that he did. And so we'll come back and kind of talk about that a little bit. But let's take a quick break. Let's get a little soothing music here, and then we'll come right back. Thank you.
spring.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, my brothers and sisters, we are back. That was the great Lonnie Liston Smith and the Cosmic Echoes, Starlight in You. A beautiful piece to soothe the middle of our discussion here. The name of that book was Silencing the Past, and the brother that wrote that is cannot pronounce his name, so I'm pleased if someone who can. It is French. I know the first part is Michel, but I that last part, T-R-O-U-I-L-L-O-T. If anybody want to take a shot at that, go right ahead. but he is the author of that book, and he's also part of the film crew that shot that movie that played on HBO that talks about some of the horrible treatment that was done, you know, to our people. So anyway, what I'd like to do, first of all, I want to read something I just turned to in the book that's very interesting here. He does this to, he has a chapter 3, which is called Unthinkable History. And he calls it, it's about the Haitian Revolution as a non-event. And that's the title of the chapter. And he says here, I wish I could, we all need histories that no history book can tell, but they are not in the classroom.
Wait, you see, I got this drone. Got a drone.
There's someone.
A dinger drone is about this big.
A dinger field flag.
Okay, I'm sorry about that, book. Somebody had their phone on. If you just remember to mute your phones when you're in the discussion, very sensitive microphones. Okay, it says, we all need histories that no history book can tell, but they are not in the classroom. Not the history classroom, anyway. They are in the lessons we learn at home, in poetry and childhood games, in what is left of history when we are done with the history books, with their verifiable facts. Otherwise, why would a black woman born and raised in the richest country of the late 20th century be more afraid to talk about slavery than a white planter in the colonial Saint Domingo just days before rebellious slaves knocked on her door? This is a story for young black Americans who are still afraid of the dark, although they are not alone. It may tell them why they are afraid.
Yeah.
I thought that's a powerful statement. But nonetheless, okay, let's, has anybody want to, first of all, you want to pronounce that brother's name? Anybody can do that for us? French is the, it's a French word, T-R-O-U-I-L-L-O-T. His first name is Michel, and he did the book about the Kill the Beast. And that's not the proper title of it, but that's powerful piece that was done on HBO. Okay, well, maybe not. That's, and like I said, I can't pronounce it. I don't want to tear it up. But it's a very good book, Silence in the Past. I'm about a fourth way of finished with it. I didn't get to the Haitian Revolution yet, but he did write extensively about it. He went beyond C.L.R. James and talked about that. Let's talk a little bit about then C.L.R. James' work. I know Dr. Bridges mentioned the fact that, you know, he did not cover some of the things that he thought maybe should be covered. But let's kind of a little bit talk about that piece of work. What do you think, Dr. Bridges, he was doing when he wrote that? What was his motivation behind it? I know it wasn't his dissertation, was it?
No, I don't think it was, no.
I don't think it was a dissertation.
No, you know, it's funny you'd ask me that question, too, Dr. Rogers, because I had just thought about it when you said it. I remember in about 1973, C.L.R. James came to North Carolina Central University. You probably didn't know that, did you?
No, I didn't. Mm-mm.
That's right. Because it was a, I'll tell you why. He came to do a lecture as a part of a series that was done by the Geography Department, and C.L.R. James, I'll never forget him because he was a kind of a brother short in stature and wore a wide hat, and and I had heard him before on WHUR radio station in Washington, D.C., but C.L.R. James used to always like to talk about colonialism.
Right. Yeah,
and
he did.
Liked to talk about... Yeah, he always... That was one of his interests, colonialism. And he also talked about mercantilism and the way the white man's arms were just like the arms of an octopus,
stretching out all the way around the world,
right.
conquering territory. And I just thought about it. I met him, but he was quite an interesting fella. But in terms of writing that book, you know, he himself was from the islands, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was. And you just exposed one of my concepts. Because I had this concept.
I didn't mean to do.
No, that's all right. No, but it's good. I mean, somebody would have asked me, I would have told them. I have a concept called racism is like an octopus. And we did a show on that. The octopus has racism. And it's all its tentacles. It has those eight arms, and they got those suctions at the end of them. And when one of them grabs you, you know, that's it. All the rest of them can get you. And then I took off from there using Francis Crest Wilson's concept of racism being in all aspects of human life. And those tentacles are those different things. When it gets you economically, it gets you physical. Someone in the background, please, has their phone muted. Their telephone is ringing. It's coming through. If you could please mute your phone, I'd appreciate it. Okay, so yeah, that's good. I borrowed that from C.L.R. James, that because an octopus is very much like that. You know, it grabs everything. It takes you and coons. And actually, when Jewel Burns wrote 20,000 Leagues Beneath the Sea, that's what he was doing. He was using the octopus as symbolism for something else, a more social, political issue, just like Herman Melville used Moby Dick. As a symbol of a political economic power, and the fact that we try to capture that, so you're right. But you're about C.L.R. James' stuff. He was from, I think, Trinidad. And,
that's exactly right.
Uh-huh, and he was really did a lot in terms of Pan-African, the whole Pan-African movement, and adding to.
Yes,
that.
He did. He really did. He talked about the various forms, which I wanted to talk about too. The various forms of techniques of the colonizers. All the colonizers had their own techniques of colonizing the various parts of the earth in which they colonized.
That's true.
And for example, the British had what was called a policy of indirect rule, and the French policy was called assimilation. You see, and since we're talking about Haiti, I did want to mention that that Haitian policy, the French policy, not the Haitian policy, the French policy of assimilation is the one that was applied to blacks on the island of Santo Domingo, which eventually became Haiti. And the doctrine of France towards the island of assimilation, It was shared by every single person living under French rule.
Right.
If you lived in Haiti, or if you lived in Guinea, in West Africa, or Togo, or Benin, or wherever the French, they all followed that same particular policy. And I thought it was interesting because when you look at Port-au-Prince in Haiti, or you look at Porto-Novo, that's the capital city of Benin, or look at Lomé, the capital of Togo, or look at Ouagadougou, the capital of Burkina Faso. All those are French colonies, and in those French colonies, they have what geographers often also call what is called the cultural landscape. And I thought that was real interesting. And the cultural landscape is actually and they transform the culture and the landscape everywhere they go, and they superimpose on the physical landscape their own activities, and that's what's called the cultural landscape. And that cultural landscape, oftentimes you can't write about it, you can't even hear it. For example, a good example would be if you go to New York, and you've been in New York, and also Brother Kamau in New York too. Chinatown. You can be blindfolded, but you can hear. You can hear the music.
You can
smell
know
the smell.
Right.
You know you're in Chinatown.
Yep, exactly. And that bird clearly is the French.
There you go.
The
and
French.
See, that's part of the cultural landscape. You go to New Orleans. You can that French cuisine. You can smell that shrimp gumbo.
Music.
You can listen to the music. You see, because that's been superimposed by the French, which
right.
is the same thing. But see, now we've mixed ourselves into it too, because the African culture has been mixed in with the French culture, and you can even see that in the music of New Orleans. I was reading a little bit about that too, in terms of the music, and also the way the architecture, those stoops and the back porches and the courtyard style of architecture that you find in New Orleans, which actually was preceded what we call shotgun houses that we had in our communities.
Right. Exactly.
You see, that's all from the French style. That's a part of that cultural landscape that geographers talk about when the activities of man are superimposed upon the physical landscape, the cultural landscape. And one thing we notice too, and that is that the French policy, there's a book called A History of the African People by a European by the name of Robert July. And I found this because I thought about it when we were talking today, Bill. But in that book by Robert July, he says that the prime mover, this is the French policy now, the prime mover of the new colony, the French said, must be European culture driven by French energy.
Right.
European culture now, driven by French energy, becoming through example, through persuasion, and through the appreciation of new achievements, the soul of the African.
And this is what it was, because I heard John Blasingame.
Right.
I heard John Blasingame at a lecture once at the Association of Study African American Life and History Convention say the French use sex as a major weapon of persuasion, and it's a part of that romanticism fervor that they have. You know, French is the romantic language of the romantics language.
Yes, yes.
But
that
they
French,
use
people love that French language, right?
they use sex as a means of doing a lot of that. They were very sexual. If the French owned a plantation, you can be assured there was a lot of sexual activity on that plantation. And you
very
know what
interesting point, right.
sex can do.
Can I say something, gentlemen? Can I say something?
Brother Timothy, I got a bunch of folk on here. I'm going to get to you. I'll come back to you in a minute. Let me go up here, too. I'm so happy to see Brother Pugh on here tonight. I think that's Brother Pugh. Brother Pugh, you got any questions or remarks? Good to hear from you. Good to see you.
Yeah, I'll make a couple of comments just right quick.
Okay.
I think I walked away, but I think you were asking the question about that fellow silencing the past.
Yeah, right. I was trying to pronounce his name. Yeah, what's his name? Pronounce
right,
it.
I would think it's Trulet. You know, that's what it appears to be to me.
Yeah,
But right, Raoul Peck and his Exterminate All the Brutes was based on his book.
Exactly.
That talked about the history of genocide and colonization.
Exactly.
Which arose from the idea that, Darwinism that the lower peoples needed to be eliminated. And, of course, they call that progress when African peoples were being eliminated. But
right.
then when World War One came and the elimination started happening in Europe, then, of course, that's when they began alarmed. The second topic that you had about it's called when you were talking about earthquakes, human caused earthquakes.
Right.
Well, in order to in order for submarines to communicate, they have to surface. But they've been experimenting with extremely low frequency and very low frequency sound waves to enable the submarines to communicate underwater. Problem though is that people have said that. First of all, there are any number of different whales and stuff who've been beaching themselves as a result of that. And there's speculation that may very well have been the cause of earthquakes in Haiti and so on. So that's the third topic is C.L.R. James.
Okay.
Two licks that I want to hit on that is, on the one hand, he was a Marxist. And so his idea was that a class analysis should trump a race analysis. When I think
that's
today
right.
we realize that that unless you have the race analysis, you know, you're not going to be able to get anywhere. The second lit is that he, like most people in those times, he thought technology was the answer, and so that's the other lit.
Okay.
And the final thing I'll say is that and I can't articulate this, you know, any better, but Haiti is crucial today. America couldn't grow rice until Haitians came here and taught them how to grow rice.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that the French, the Spanish, and the Americans and the English were defeated, fought Haiti, and Haiti defeated all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and he defeated Napoleon. That forced Napoleon to have to sail Louisiana. And so the whole ideal of America actually becoming a democracy, Jefferson believed that if he bought Louisiana, then he'd be able to take Louisiana, that territory, divide it up into small pieces, and then give those small pieces to poor white people so that they could have the property necessary to actually be citizens in this country. And the final lick is that the Civil War was due to the fact that when you had the Missouri Compromise that basically said that no state above a certain, I think the 36th parallel, could be a slave state,
mm-hmm.
and anything. But then when the Kansas-Nebraska Act comes along, and Stephen Douglas, the one who defeated Abraham Lincoln for senator in 1856, in order for him, he wanted to make money with a transcontinental railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But in order for him to get the railroad built, he had to get votes from people in the South. To get votes from the people in the South, he proposed the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which basically says that the state of Nebraska and Kansas, the people themselves can vote whether they want slavery or not. The problem was that Nebraska and Kansas were above the 36th parallel,
mm-hmm.
and what it meant was that northern radicals and Republicans said, or actually at that time there weren't any Republicans, but Northerners, northern Whigs, because at that time you could be in the Whig party and you could be in the South or the North and whatnot. Well, the Northerners felt that this was a betrayal of the Missouri Compromise, because it basically says that if the people in Nebraska and Kansas voted that they wanted to have slavery, they can have it no matter where they were in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that led to the Civil War. So actually, Haiti has been crucial in the development of this country, and what's happening, obviously, with them basically trying to corral African people like their cattle down there in Texas is bringing all this stuff to a head.
Exactly.
So I'll just let it go at that.
Well, good. That's great. And first, and how are you doing? I know you all had some problems with your electricity and all of that. I know the last time I talked to you, you were going through some of that. Everything corrected?
Well, we had the storm here, and we were out of power for about 10 days. But one of the key things is that, you know, it was a Category 4 hurricane.
Right.
Ground Zero was in Cancer Alley. Now, Cancer Alley is a 70-mile petrochemical corridor between Baton Rouge and New Orleans.
Mm.
I mean, it's some of the most toxic shit known to humans, right? And so you got a Category 4 hurricane that came through there, so ain't no telling what the consequences of that storm are going to be. And, in fact, so, it, you know, all of this stuff is related.
It really is. And Louisiana is really an interesting place, and that whole Gulf of Mexico and all of that. Yeah, it's really some deeper stuff involved there. Thank you so much, Brother Pugh.
And of course, you saw that, you know, the real deaths were happening in New York and New Jersey.
Exactly.
From the flooding. So,
exactly.
So you don't have to get a hurricane. So,
right.
All right.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you so much.
Brother Herbie White, I know you're on here. I saw you, Brother Herbie. How you doing tonight,
hey,
Brother
Pop,
Herbie?
You hear me?
Yeah, no, I ain't got you, Brother. Herbie White, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing, Dr. Rogers and everyone else on the show?
They're good. I wanted you to, if you could, what is your thoughts on what's going on at that border with the Lone Ranger and John Wayne and all them down there with the horses and the whips? What is your take on that? What do you think that's
Dr. Rogers, you remember a couple of weeks ago you asked people's opinion of Joe Biden and the job he was doing?
I sure do.
And I told you that his ancestors lynched our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
The apple don't fall too far from the tree.
Yeah. There you
go. Any question, it should be answered.
That's true. All right. Thank you so much. Okay, brother.
Hey,
go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir, man. Another war y'all nobody don't really want to talk about, but nobody knows, man. But remember, Ethiopia beat Italy, right?
Right.
Y'all remember that war? Okay.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. I did some investigation. Knowledge came to me, man. Okay. Just imagine this. Every picture you see with Haile Selassie, he with a real live lions, right? You ever notice that with Haile Selassie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I came to some investigation. They used the animals, the lions, to capture the Italians, man. They used the lions and the elephants and the doggone leopard. Okay, they go your Black Panther right there.
Mm-hmm.
They use the animals to beat Rome, man, to beat Italy.
Right.
Even the bees there, Dr. Rogers. Y'all can look it up now. Y'all do the research. Y'all smart. Just look at what Haile Selassie Ethiopia did to defeat Rome. See, them, like my man said, the five folks, I want y'all to know that now. Okay? But it's coming out, the truth coming out, man. It's beautiful. So, yes, our ancestors, we know how to use nature to beat them.
That's
so,
right.
Therefore, they trying to flip the script and use nature to beat us with them mosquitoes they got in Florida. Okay, they use the deadly art of mosquitoes in Florida,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know. That's, we already know how to use animals against them. Because you look at the alligators, they black. Alligators, they all, and sharks, they always get attacked by sharks and alligators, right? The animals love us, man. Okay? So just look up Haile Selassie.
No, you're right. No, you're clearly right.
The
animal kingdom.
You see Haile Selassie. He in a picture with some lions, some real ones, man.
Right.
Okay.
And I saw this one video with two Africans. I mean, they're about 6'7". Okay, they was walking through the bushes with some spears. They came up to a lion and took the meat right out of the jaws of the lion, man. The lion just sat there and shook his head. And said,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe them ninjas did that. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we got the power, man. All we got to do is learn it, get back to nature. We got them, man.
Yep, that's true.
Got him. Okay, that's so. But y'all check out Haile Selassie, man, and the way Ethiopia beat Italy, man, it'll blow y'all mind, man.
Just think about, and you know, to go along with what you said, just think about the Vietnam War. Them rice farmers, America had to couldn't stop them. They couldn't because they knew jungle warfare. They knew how to go down in those trenches. So they had to go use napalm and try to wipe them out.
I'm gonna tell you, I got to say, man. I saw a video with a black African woman walking down the path with a lion, man.
It was
like a dog. She had a dog, man. Okay, so you're right, my brother. I'll be quiet, but it's a beautiful time, man. Well,
exactly.
We got them, man. We got them. They tie them up.
But, Brother Timothy, you had some more thoughts you wanted to add?
Yes, sir. I wanted to tell you, our little panel here in the audience, that in the nation, the Black Jacobins was a required reading.
Okay.
Oh, it was required reading without a doubt.
Fantastic.
Before the Mayflower and Fanon's work. Because when you talk about the psychology of what the colonizer does, I hear you put all that in there, but Fanon's work and the Black Jacobins, and you mentioned all the illustrations of the snake, they always had it in the Muhammad Speaks, how the serpent went around the world and used it. Y'all talked about the octopus and its tentacles.
Mm-hmm.
They used the snake in the nation. And
mm-hmm.
what's the opposite of the snake was they had the brother that was from the east connecting with the brother on the west, and they would hold hands. And that would kind of break up that serpent. That was another symbolism in the Muhammad speech, the two brothers holding hands, one from the east and one from the west.
Mm.
The serpent, right. The serpent, I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And that the gathering of the hands.
Right.
Those are all symbolisms of good. Just want to bring that out there.
That's powerful. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Brother Lush, how you doing tonight?
Good evening, everyone. I'm just overwhelmed with all of the information that's been put forth, especially about Haiti. One of my curiosities is what happened a little bit later after 1804, and maybe Brother Timothy of North Carolina could help me with this. I'm curious to know, how did Haiti work with Greece in the 1800s with their independency? I thought I had heard somewhere that they, I think that was under Jean-Pierre Boyer, just kind of curious if anyone would know anything about that period of time and the work that Haiti did in helping Greece with their independency.
Brother Tim, you still on North Carolina? Now, he might have hung up, Brother Lush.
He might have left.
Yeah, I haven't. Unfortunately, I have not heard of that. I know that what some of the research that I did look at is that they were trying to find a trade partner to do some work, because that was their major issue. They couldn't get anybody else to work with them. Because they were an African country, they were independent, and that they were up against the French. And so the friends of the French encouraged the rest of Europe not to work with them. And they were having trouble trying to find that economic connection. So I do know that part. So maybe there were some underground things that did occur. The only way they were able to do anything at all is the Dominican Republic people, Santo Domingo folk, who were more white-looking and more European-like-looking, but at the same time, they were still had the African bloodline, were able to use some folk and obviously work with Haiti in that way. Because if you remember, Haiti was producing the sugar. They were sending the sugar throughout the rest of the world. And then Santo Domingo came in, and they had sugar too, because it's right there on the border. And even in the modern period of time, a lot of the Haitian workers were crossing that border, going over to Santo Domingo to help with the sugar production, and they were being sent back because of the fact that the Santo Domingans didn't want them working with them either, because they were taken away from their business. So they always had a struggle. But one of the things, though, that did occur is they, through technology and science, there is a better form of sugar than actually the sugar cane. And the one that produced that was Haiti, and that's the beet. Beets produce a sweetener much better than sugar cane. And so that sweetener is in the hands of the Haitians. And so they were able to use the beet. And basically, the sugar beet is used for commercial sweeteners. That's a commercial sweetener. And so for a while, they were controlling that part, while the San Domingo were controlling the sugar cane. And that sugar cane, that's where, you know, you get Domino sugar. Domino sugar, you know, comes out of that sugar, Hawaii, and Cuba. Cuba is supposedly the best grade of sugar that there is. And you know that in the grocery store.
And just one other quick little thing, you know, about especially Haitians against Haitians. I'm just curious, you know, there's Papa Duvalier,
right.
Who wasn't a very nice guy.
No, he wasn't.
I think that's back in the 70s or so. Could someone just talk about President Duvalier and his events.
Dr. Bridges, you were going to talk about that
when they were trying to get out of Haiti.
Dr. Bridges, you wanted to talk about that.
Yes, Jean-Claude Duvalier. Yeah, I think he became president in about 1957, and when he did, he became he proclaimed that he was going to be president.
Okay. Yeah. You got 15?
Yeah, man, it's in fact.
He proclaimed that he was going to be president for life. Duvalier did, and he did any and everything he could to keep the Haitian people from revolting, from doing anything against his government or anything at all that was contrary to what he was about. And, of course, he had this paramilitary gang called, and by the way, he was in the hip pocket of the United States of America.
Oh, big time.
And he also was in he had this paramilitary, I call it a gang, called the Mongoose Gang. And this Mongoose Gang was a gang of men who were like soldiers and who killed thousands of Haitian people throughout his bloody regime on the island of Haiti under Duvalier. And Duvalier, of course, was succeeded by his son, who was called Baby Doc
Baby
Duvalier.
Yeah,
Jean-Claude Duvalier was his name. He'd call him Baby Doc, right. And when he left Haiti during the coup, he went over into France and died in France not too very long ago. And they say he took about $540 million out of the country of Haiti with him. Because what we have to realize is that Haiti has always been a very, very, very rich country. That's another reason the United States of America wants to want to control it, because of its wealth, its resources that are there. As a matter of fact, it was called the crown jewel.
Yep, the crown jewel
in the
Caribbean.
In the French crown. That's most of all. The reason there is a France today is because of the money that the French economy galvanized on the backs of African people from the island of Haiti. That's why there's a French economy today, because Haiti built that French economy up in the same way that African people built the economic system in the United States of America. It's the same thing. If you take the colonialism away from the building and the wealth of nations, as Adam Smith talked about, the wealth of nations, if you take the bullion, he called it, in the wealth of nations, the gold and the silver, the bullion. The bullion was produced by African people. In Haiti, they produced the sugar cane, but they could not process it. They produced it in Haiti, but it was processed in France, and then sold back to other French colonies. In the same way that Britain processed certain goods and materials, but the raw materials came from the colonized countries.
Right.
England has no resources.
Mm-hmm.
France has no resources.
They sure don't.
You see, Scotland, Wales, they have no resources. The colonizer and his economy and his whole system is built on the extension that he has into the poor colonies that they have stolen from other parts of the world.
Right.
Very good, Dr. Bridges.
And that explains a lot of these coups that you see, a lot of these wars. That's what it's about. It's not about they don't like each other.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, there's a good article in either this week's Final Call or last week's Final Call newspaper, and I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet, but I'd like for those who can find it. It talks about how it is for the benefit of the United States of America, and it's talking specifically about Haiti, to keep the Haitian government destabilized. Kill the leaders, take the resources, but keep them destabilized. And because Haiti is still paying for the fact that a small black nation defeated, at that time, the world's greatest general, according to white folk, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Right.
That black people in Haiti are still paying for the fact that they defeated Napoleon Bonaparte.
Exactly. That's
right.
A,
they're still
that's
for
a
it. And
that's
they pay
a
for it. And that takes us to the borders. I know you want to talk a little bit about the borders and what's going on in the borders. And there were some people said they want to.
Well, you
call
know what? I got a couple
myself
of more people I want to call on that I didn't call
right,
on.
Go ahead. I'm through. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go
let me go to 919-519. 919-519. comment or question or just listening. 919-519. Okay, just listening.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a very good DVD is 1804,
right.
The Hidden History of Haiti.
Yeah.
There it is.
That's exactly right. Sure is. Very good
1804,
one.
The Hidden History of Haiti. You can get it on Amazon for about $25.
Yeah, you're right.
Excellent.
Okay, thank you. Let me go to 919. No, I'm sorry, 414-573. 414-573. How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine, Dr. Rogers. I didn't know you could hear. Oh, wow. Good evening to everybody. Good to hear everyone's voices in the comments. I came on common late. But, you know, interesting topic, because I had heard a while back about, as some of them were saying, Haiti's resources as it relates to the gold. And I just looked it up because Haiti is very... It's wealthy in gold, and I have heard that even its resource, you know, the land on certain parts of the island is abundant and is wealthy, but there's so much happening politically with other countries trying to do the exploitation. So did you all talk about that?
Yeah, we did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you talked about how even with the election with Hillary Clinton, I had read something. Did you talk about Hillary Clinton's involvement?
Not specifically, but yeah, in that area though. What about it? You want to make a quick note about Hillary Clinton?
Well, one of the reasons I was kind of reluctant and did some more reading about Hillary Clinton is because there's two large gold mines in Haiti, and there's copper, there's zinc, silver. And so if they could keep that country destabilized, keep these different kind of things happening, then these other European countries, Canada, Britain, can move in and begin to negotiate. I think that was part, not negotiate, exploit. And I think that was part of why we just now see the overthrow of the government.
Right.
But Hillary Clinton had wanted to, if not, withhold aid to Haiti when they had the earthquake before, based upon wanting to have control over one of those gold mines.
Okay.
And then she was going to have her brother run that gold mining company over there.
Yeah, I think I heard something about that. Yeah, you're right. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
mm-hmm.
know the details.
And I was reading about that. So now, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, as that brother was saying, somebody called in and was saying something about the sound waves under the surface with submarines and things. I mean, you know, I'm suspicious that, you know, why is Haiti having all these earthquakes?
Well, we talked about that. We talked about that a little bit. And Dr. Bridges is a geographer, and we talked about those possibility of man-made earthquakes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because on the other side you got Dominican Republic, and I mean it's right there, so
right.
You don't see it happening in the Dominican Republic, but you see it happening right there in Haiti, and I think it's because it really wants to control.
Right, that's exactly. We talked about that, and you probably can catch it on the recording on the podcast. But we did go into detail about how that.
They also have. I'm sorry, I'm cut off. I want to add a little. They also got something called a mineral called iridium. Y'all look up iridium, and iridium is a mineral that increases your senses or your third eye, your kundalini, and they got that iridium over there too. That's like vibranium, mm-hmm. man. Y'all mm-hmm. check out iridium, man. Y'all check it out.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right, my brother.
Right. Okay. Let me go to 414-507. Are you listening, or you have a question or a comment?
I'm just listening, Doc.
Okay. Great. Very good. All right. Sounds good. Brother Marcus, how you doing tonight?
Greetings, brother.
Great. How are you feeling?
I'm good, Dr. Rogers. You know, every island needs a mainland. The island can't sustain itself. It needs a mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, they don't want Haiti to attach to the American mainland.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Haiti really needs to be drained off. You got 10 million people living on that rock.
Mm-hmm.
10 million people. You know what I'm saying? So I think we really need that Black Star Line. That Black Star Line part two. We need it here in America too. Because you say the King Alfred plan or whatever. They're drafting up for black people.
Right.
But there's always a slip between the cup right. and the lip. So, you know, while he's planning, we're planning too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Haiti had that devastating earthquake that killed 300,000 people. You know that Senegal, at that time, Senegal offered to take 1 million people. They say we'll absorb 1 million Haitians.
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
They couldn't even get the ship. We couldn't even rally around to get the ship to transport our people. You know, so, you know, we have to reflect on ourselves too. If those islands in the Caribbean had any sense, they would all rally around Haiti. But, you know, everybody trying to get away from Haiti, you know. So we pay, you know, when we pay for stuff, and we're paying, you know.
Right.
And we're going to continue to pay until we stand up as black men and black women.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Keep on keeping on.
Thank you so much, my brother. Thank you so much. Sister Benicia, mm-hmm. what you got any thoughts? Sister Benicia, you got any thoughts?
Yeah, greetings, family. How's everyone doing?
Good, good.
Greetings. I hit Amen Corner with Sister Didi.
Yeah, she's in the Amen Corner. Yeah.
Or the I Said Corner, let's say.
Yep.
But listen, yes. I just want to say quickly, you know, I love the conversation.
Yes.
And I really would like to see us get more young people listening to these types of broadcasts, because, you know, this is where you can listen and learn.
Right.
And our brothers and sisters are putting it down.
Dr.
Richards, you're on point all, you know, as usual. Brother Pugh put it down. So, yeah, this has been great.
Brother Parker?
Yes. So I came on kind of late, too, but I've been listening for about 30 minutes. And it just made me think, as an activist, about how critical it is for us to really work toward this and build this Pan-Africanist movement.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Because the wealthiest countries and nations on this earth keep getting attacked viciously by Europe, including the US. And it's ongoing. They just don't stop. And I don't know if anybody mentioned the human capital taken out of Haiti, the children.
Yes.
Anybody talk about that?
Not in detail, no.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So they've been taking children. And the Clintons, really guilty of this, taking children out of Haiti into sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, organ, you know, whatever they're doing with it. I can't think of the term right now.
Stealing their organs.
I mean, they are really doing a job on the Haitian children. And a lot of parents are actually selling their children to these... to these white predators that come over there because they're starving.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so the children are paying a horrible price. And that's what happens very often when Europeans go to their predator behavior, the savage behavior. Our children pay the price. So...
Yeah.
In terms of what we need to be doing is really building this Pan-Africanist movement, because we got to do something about Haiti.
Yeah.
And with them whipping the Haitians, you know, I couldn't believe it when I saw it, whipping them and sitting on those horses, whipping them. I said, you know, they're still getting really bold
with how they
want to treat us, and they don't care that we see it.
Mm-hmm.
We better pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they want us to see it. You know, it's more intimidation,
and want us to take care of Afghanistan is still coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention that too. Wants to take care of the people coming over here from Afghanistan. We didn't get. I wanted to get to that too. There's Afghans.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So that's all I want to say. You know, everybody's becoming clear that when Haitians try to come here, they get beat and all kinds of stuff, killed, sent back. But anybody else that's not a black African, they let them come on in.
Right. Exactly.
So that's all I want to contribute. We better get to building and moving.
Okay. All right. Dr. Bridges, we got about 2 minutes. You want to close it out? And we cut off quick. So any closing thoughts you got?
No, I'd just like to say that I think we covered quite a bit tonight.
Yep, we did.
I'd like to do a part two on this when we get a chance, though, to talk a little bit more about currently what's really going on currently. And as I mentioned, too, they want us to feel sorry for the Afghan refugees who come over here, but at the same time, on the same news, they show what they're doing to our Haitian brothers and sisters, but yet they want our hearts to go out. And even in Durham, North Carolina, and other cities around the country, wants to take care of the Afghans who come in here. But
that's
you
right.
know, it's
that's
just
exactly
always somebody
right.
other than us. That's
everybody
all.
Else. That's right. And well, you know, we want to do that. We're gonna have another discussion in about 2 to 3 weeks because the guy that's working with the White House from Milwaukee. On this crisis, he's a part of the Democratic Party. He's working to find out what is being done. They're monitoring the border, and so he's going to come on and talk to us about the behind the scenes stuff. And so when we bring him on,
that'd be good. That'd be real good. Yeah,
it is. We'll review all of this again and go to. By that time, we've had some steam that's built up a little bit, and we've got some things to talk about. So. I really appreciate all of you. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful. We will be back again next Tuesday evening at 7:00 Central Time, and we'll be here at Black Reality Think Tank. Have a great weekend, everyone, and I will see you on next Tuesday. Thanks so much. And appreciate all of your input.
Thank you. Black Power.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, over you, dungaree, red jacket, short. If you be my boogie-woogie country girl. Well, I mean, what I mean, my boogie-woogie country girl. Now, if you dig that music with a beat rockin' rollin', is the meat my boogie-woogie country girl. Well, I mean, what I mean, my boogie-woogie country girl. On Saturday night, she comes down. Play the jukebox and let the air on down. My boogie-woogie country girl. What I mean, what I mean, my boogie-woogie country girl. And I roll! She can milk a cow. Don't like squares, go daddy, taught her how. Boogie-woogie country girl. What I mean, my boogie-woogie country girl. She's up every morning about 5:30. She lets the gold fishes cause it keeps you alive. Boogie-woogie country girl. Well, I mean, my boogie-woogie country. Country girl, well, you did.